Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango.
This is a podcast where I am slowly but surely walking Mango through the story of the Stormlight Archive we're currently working on, Words of Radiance. We are getting close to the end of part three. This week actually is kind of... I have less notes, so hopefully that equals a shorter episode. And we're kind of just knocking out a couple chapters before we can do the behemoth of an episode next week that is the part three finale. Before we jump into this episode, at Speak Stormlight on Twitter. That's the Twitter account. That's all I wanted to do. Do you have any idea what happened last time?
Vaguely. I remember Adolin admitted to shitting himself.
He did. That happened. Yes.
Shallan found out that someone killed her brother.
Yes. She presumes Amaram.
Yeah, we know better. Mm-hmm. And Kaladin learned how to fly.
Yeah. And Kaladin...
And then almost murdered, or almost attempted to murder...
Amaram?
What's his face? Amaram.
Yep.
And then he was like, okay, fine, Syl. I won't kill him today.
We'll do it a different day. We also found out that, well, we didn't find out, but we met with Graves, who is the person organizing the assassination attempts against Elokar that Moash has been meeting with.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing that happened last week was our good friend Relaine said goodbye to Kaladin. Relaine, formerly known as Shen, departed.
Mm-hmm.
Goodbye, Relaine. We will see you later.
Will we?
Oh, yes. I love Relaine so much. There's a lot of fan art of Relaine that I want to share with you that I can't yet. But when I can, oh boy, I'm excited to.
What? You can't share it because it's spoilers?
Kind of. It's Relaine is one half of what will be a gay relationship that Sanderson has confirmed is a thing.
What?
In Word of Brandon, somebody asked Sanderson if Relaine and somebody else are into each other. And Sanderson said yes, but I can't tell you who the other person is yet, because that is a spoiler.
Are they another listener, or...?
It is a character that you have already met.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. This week, chapter 53... Perfection. It has Adolin's symbol on it. The epigraph reads, as to the other orders that were inferior in this visiting of the far realm of Spren, the Elskallers were prodigiously benevolent, allowing others as auxiliary to their visits and interactions. Though they did never relinquish their place as prime liaisons with the great ones of the Spren, and the Lightweavers and Willshapers both also had an affinity to the same, though neither were the true masters of that realm. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 6, Page 2. So there's a lot in there, and I'm going to break it down just a bit. The Elskallers are one of the orders of the Knights Radiant, and they seemed to be the ones that were most familiar with Shadesmar and the Spren. They were the ones that had the easiest access to that place and to the Spren. Yasna was an Elskaller. Lightweavers, that's what Shallan is, can also interact with Shadesmar and the Spren, but not to the degree that Elskallers can. And Willshapers are another order that can also do that. Again, not to the level as Elskallers.
Oh, so there's two different powers then that can interact with Shadesmar, and Yasna's order is the only one that has both of them.
That is probably the case.
Okay.
Is the other I mean, that would make sense. I'm not like, I just don't know 100% for myself. Yep, that's it. One of them would be soul casting, because that is what Lightweavers and Elskallers share.
Mm.
I can't say what the other one is because you don't know that surge yet. But yes, there would be another one that shares that.
Mm.
Anyways, history lesson done. This chapter, Adolin beats the shit out of Elit in a duel. That's how we start. He just trounces the man. After that, he retires to his staging room where Renarin and Navani are waiting. Shallan shows up to congratulate him, and Navani is like, "I, peace out, I'm gone," before Shallan can say anything. And Adolin is like, yeah, just maybe give her a little bit more time to grieve. I'm sure she'll want to talk to you eventually. Shallan says that she wants to have dinner and a walk with Adolin the next day. And then Relis storms into the staging area, demanding the bout to be nullified, but High Judge Istau refuses. And I'm going to read from the book here. You want your cousin's plate back? Adolin asked quietly. Fight me for it. I won't be goaded by you, Relis said. I won't let you pull me into another of your dueling farces. Six shards, Relis, Adolin said. Mine, those of my brother, Aranev's plate, and your cousin's plate. I wager them all on a single bout, you and me. You're a dunnard if you think I'll agree to that, Relis snapped. Too afraid? Adolin asked. You're beneath me, Colin. These last two fights prove it. You don't even know how to duel anymore. All you know are tricks. Then you should be able to beat me easily. Relis wavered. Finally, he pointed at Adolin again. You're a bastard, Colin. I know you fought my cousin to embarrass my father and myself. I refuse to be goaded. He turned to leave. If you're afraid, Adolin said, you don't have to duel me alone. Relis stopped in place. Are you saying you'll take me on with anyone else at the same time? I am, Adolin said. I'll fight you and whomever you bring, together. You are a fool, Relis breathed. Yes or no? 2 days, Relis snapped, here in the arena. He looked to the High Judge. You witnessed this? I do, she said. Relis stormed out. The High Judge lingered, regarding Adolin. You realize what you have done. I know the dueling conventions quite well. Yes, I'm aware. She sighed, but nodded, walking out. And that is the end of the chapter.
Fun.
I am going to grab a picture for you. Some sketches of Shallan's that I've placed in our little general chat here. The note reads, A Lady's Pace by Brightness Axeface. A proper Vorin lady walks with her safe hand covered by her free hand, both held before her. She steps with poise and deliberation. Head up, back straight, feet level with the floor. She does not swing her arms or raise her toes like a common dark eyes at a farm dance. She does not slouch. And it's, you can kind of see from the drawings, it's like, the top is how Shallan walks, and the bottom is her kind of figuring out how her alter ego Vale walks, the one that is meeting with the Ghost Bloods. That's Tin's, like, coat that she's wearing in those sketches. And her hat.
Yeah, so she has to change the way she walks when she goes places.
And the easiest way for Shallan to, like, assume these extra identities that we've seen is that she kind of, if she draws them first, she has an easier time kind of slipping into them.
Mm. I also noticed that when she's in her disguise, she does not have her safe hand covered.
No, she does not. I believe she's wearing a glove.
Mm.
Some women wear gloves instead of a safe hand, and it's kind of scandalous a little bit. It's like you're a lower dark-eyed lady. Also, if you'll notice, the little crab thing, or little bug thing that she drew that is giving this speech has, like, a woman's face with, like, some hair on it, and that's pretty funny. And also, she's breathing fire.
She looks like a cross between the cricket from Mulan and one of the ancestors from Mulan.
You're right. I know exactly which one you're talking about. Chapter 54 is titled Vale's Lesson, and it has Shallan's symbol. The epigraph reads, There came also 16 of the Order of Windrunners, and with them a considerable number of squires, and finding in that place the Skybreakers dividing the innocent from the guilty, there ensued a great debate. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 28, page 3. Shallan travels in her guise as Vale to a meeting with the Ghost Bloods in the Unclaimed Hills, following a map sent via Spanreed. Moraes, standing tall and proud, inspected his long blowgun. He did not look up as Shallan stepped under the awning. I'd like to learn to use the local weapons, Moraes said. It is a quirk, though I feel it is justified. If you want to understand a people, learn their weapons. The way men kill one another says far but more about their culture than any scholar's ethnography. He asks her to analyze what a Parshendi blowgun says about their society, and she says some stuff about it. Moraes was studying her. I see, he finally said. Tin chose a scholar to be her apprentice this time around. I find that unusual. So, Moraes said, what excuse did Tin give you today? Excuse, Shallan asked, for failing in her mission. Shallan began. I'm beginning to wonder if Tin really is sick, to not even try to carry out the assigned task. Not even try, Shallan asked, baffled. Oh, is that the excuse, Moraes asked, that she made an attempt and trailed? I have people watching that house. If she had... He trailed off as Shallan undid her satchel and lifted out a sheet of paper. It was a representation of Amaram's locked room with its maps on the walls. Moraes took the picture from her and raised it. He studied it. "It is rare," Moraes said, "that I am proven a fool. Congratulations." "Tin doesn't have this skill," Moraes continued, still inspecting the sheet. "You saw this room yourself? There was a reason that she chose a scholar as her assistant. My skills are meant to complement her own." Moraes lowered the sheet. "Surprising. Your mistress might be a brilliant thief, but her choice of associates has always been unenlightened." "Pity there is not more detail to these maps," Moraes noted. Shallan obligingly got out the other five pictures she'd drawn for him. Four were the maps on the walls in detail, the others a closer depiction of the wall scrolls with Amaram's script. In each one, the actual writing was indecipherable, just wiggled lines. Shallan had done this on purpose. Nobody would expect an artist to be able to capture such detail from memory, even though she could. "Amazing," Moraes said of Shallan's pictures. "These are masterful. A triumph, certainly. Such artistry." What had happened to the dangerous, emotionless man who had confronted her at her first meeting with the Ghostbloods? Animated with emotion, he leaned down, studying the pictures one at a time. He even got out a magnifying glass in order to inspect the details. "Well," Moraes asked. "Come, sit down, child. You did this yourself?" "I did," Shallan said. She settled into the seat beside the table. "I copied some of the text for you," Shallan said, fishing out one page of script. These were lines she had specifically chosen to show them. They didn't reveal too much, but might act as a primer to get Moraes talking about the topic. "We didn't have much time in the room, so I only got a few lines." "You spent so long in there drawing the pictures and did so little recording the text?" Moraes asked. "Oh," Shallan said. "No, I did those pictures from memory." He looked up at her, jaw lowered a fraction, an expression of genuine surprise crossing his face. Now she would have to keep that aspect of her skill secret, lest the Ghostbloods made a connection between Shallan the Light-Eyed Lady and Vale the Dark-Eyed Con Artist. Well, she was bound to make some mistakes. At least this one wasn't life-threatening. Probably. Moraes has Shallan look at a man named Jin and then draw him from memory. She finished and handed it to him. "Incredible," he said, holding the sheet up. "You are wasted with tin. You can't do this with text, however." "No," Shallan lied. "Pity. Still, this is marvelous. Marvelous. There should be ways to use this. Yes, indeed." He looked to her. "What is your goal, child? I might have a place for you in my organization if you prove reliable." "Yes." "I wouldn't have agreed to come in Tin's place if I hadn't wanted that opportunity." Moraes narrowed his eyes at Shallan. "You killed her, didn't you?" "Ha ha ha!" Moraes exclaimed. She finally picked an assistant who was too capable. Delightful. After all of her arrogant posturing, she was brought down by someone she thought to make into a sycophant. "Sir," Shallan said, I didn't want to. She turned on me." "That must be quite the story," Moraes said, smiling. Know that what you have done is not forbidden, but it is hardly encouraged. We cannot run an organization properly if subordinates consider hunting their superiors to be a primary method of advancement." "Yes, sir." "Your superior, however, was not a member of our organization. Tin thought herself to be the hunter, but she was game all along. If you are to join us, you should understand. We are not like the others you may have known. We have a greater purpose, and we are protective of one another." "Yes, sir." "So who are you?" he asked. "Who are you really, Vale?" "Someone who wants to be part of things," Shallan said. "Things more important than stealing from the odd light eyes or scamming for a weekend of luxury." "So it is a hunt, then," Moraes said. He turned away from her, walking back to the edge of the pavilion. "More instructions will follow. Do the task assigned to you, then we shall see." When she is out of sight of the Ghostbloods, she hides inside an illusionary rock. She tells Baddern to imitate her to tell the carriage to return to the war camps. Then Moraes' voice approached. "We will need to find out how much he knows," Moraes' voice said. "You will bring these pages to Master Thydakar. We are close. But so, it appears, are Rastaris' cronies." The response came in a rasping voice. Shallan couldn't make it out. "No, I'm not worried about that one. The old fool sows chaos, but does not reach for the power offered by opportunity. He hides in his insignificant city, listening to its songs, thinking he plays in world events. He has no idea. His is not the position of the hunter. This creature in Tukar, however, is different. I'm not convinced he is human. If he is, he's certainly not of the local species." Moraes continued speaking, but Shallan heard no more as they moved off. So there's a little bit there. Moraes, I can't remember if this has been said before. I don't think it has. But Moraes says that the Ghostbloods are working for Master Thydakar, who is one of the names that Gavilar assumed had sent Zeth. And also Amaram mentions Thydakar being like their enemy in one of the flashbacks that Kaladin has.
And also in a message you sent me.
Oh yes, Thydakar is an asshole.
Well, you sent me something like, why would Thydakar do this?
Oh.
Just out of context. And I was like, because he's a dumbass, probably. And you're like, you have no idea how true that is.
Yeah. That was one of the lines that Amaram says. He's like, why would Thydakar do this? When he's talking in when right before he kills Kaladin's friends. Which means Amaram assumed that Thydakar had sent Helleran.
Mm.
Whether that is the case or not, that is what Amaram
assumed. Were they fighting against Thydakar?
No, but Helleran appearing was so weird and so out of place that Amaram assumed that he must have been like an assassin sent by Thydakar.
Oh.
And Amaram works for Vistaris, who Marais, Marais refers to Amaram as one of Vistaris' cronies.
This is very, very complicated.
Yes, it is.
Stuff to keep track of.
Yes, it's a lot. Don't worry. It's a slow burn in the background. You don't need to remember all of it, but when it comes up, I try to do a little refresher on everybody's relation if I can, as long, you know, try to keep it brief, but still do a little refresher.
I know is that Thydakar is a dumbass.
And that's all you really need to know.
Good.
Shallan's illusion wears off after several hours and she walks back to the war camps. What I need to do, Shallan said, is train you to speak along with my images. You should have them speak themselves, Pattern said. Can I do that? Why not? Because, well, I use light for the illusion, and so they create an imitation of light. Makes sense. I don't use sound to make them, though. This is a surge, Pattern said. Sound is a part of it. Cousins of one another. Very similar. It can be done. How? Somehow. You're very helpful. I am glad. He trailed off. Lie? Yep. On the way, she encounters her burned-out carriage, wrecked with all the parchment and the driver killed. She feels sick and blames herself for bringing them with her, and she assumes that Marais and the Ghostbloods must have done this as, like, they're trying to kill her to test her, to make sure that she really does belong among them. And she thinks about how she'd wanted to like Marais when he was getting all excited over her art, but this reminds her what the Ghostbloods were willing to do, and she walks back to the war camps alone. Chapter 55, The Rule of the Game, also one of my favorite chapters in the whole book. It has Kaladin's symbol, and the epigraph reads, "The considerable abilities of the Skybreakers for making such amounted to an almost divine skill, for which no specific surge or spren grants capacity. But however the Order came to such an aptitude, the fact of it was real and acknowledged even by their rivals." From Words of Radiance, Chapter 28, Page 3. And I'm going to read probably a lot from the book for this one, because it's really good. Great. You're the one guarding me today? Kaladin turned as Adolin came out of his room. I don't trust her, Princeling, Kaladin said. Foreign woman, secret betrothal, and the only person who could vouch for her is dead? She could be an assassin, and that means putting you under the watch of the best I have. Humble, aren't we? Adolin said, striding down the stone hallway, Kaladin falling into step beside him. No. That was a joke, Bridge Boy. My mistake. I was under the impression that jokes were supposed to be funny. Only to people with a sense of humor. Ah, of course, Kaladin said. I traded in my sense of humor long ago. And what did you get for it? Scars, Kaladin said softly. Adolin's eyes flicked toward the brands on Kaladin's forehead. This is great, Adolin said under his breath. Just great. I'm so happy you're coming along. They emerged into the war camp. We collecting any other guards? Adolin asked. Usually there's two of you. Just me today. Kaladin was short-manned. A carriage waited. A footman opened the door for Adolin, who settled into the confines. The footman closed the door, then climbed into a place at the back of the carriage. Kaladin prepared to swing up into the seat beside the carriage driver, then stopped. You! He cried, pointing at the driver. Me! The king's wit replied from where he sat, holding the reins. What was he doing driving the carriage? Kaladin clambered cautiously up into his seat, and Wit shook the reins, prodding the horses into motion. What are you doing here? Kaladin asked him. Trying to find mischief, Wit replied cheerfully. Have you been practicing with my flute? Don't tell me you left it in Sadeus's camp when you moved out. Well, I said not to tell me. You don't need to, since I already know. A shame. If you knew the history of that flute, it would make your brain flip upside down. And by that, I mean that I would shove you off this carriage for having spied on me. Elegant today, I see. I'm a soldier, not a musician, Kaladin said. Besides, music is for women. All people are musicians, Whit countered. The question is whether or not they share their songs. As for music being feminine, it's interesting that the woman who wrote that treatise, and the one you all practically worship in Alethkar, decided that all the feminine tasks involve sitting around having fun, while all the masculine ones involve finding someone to stick a spear in you. Telling, eh? I guess so. You know, I'm working very hard to come up with engaging, clever, meaningful points of interest to offer you. I can't help thinking you're not upholding your side of the conversation. It's a little like playing music for a deaf man, which I might try doing, as it sounds fun. If only someone hadn't lost my flute. I'm sorry, Kaladin said. So, did you keep your job? As King's Whit, I mean. When we met before, you implied you were in danger of losing your title. I haven't checked yet, Whit said. You haven't? Does the king know you're back? Nope. I'm trying to think of a properly dramatic way to inform him. Perhaps 100 chasm fiends marching in unison, singing an ode to my magnificence. That sounds hard. Yeah, the storming things have real trouble tuning their tonic chords and maintaining just intonation. I have no idea what you just said. Yeah, the storming things have real trouble tuning their tonic chords and maintaining just intonation. I have to tell you, I read that line like 6 times the other day trying to get it right. There's so many T's. There's so many T's. That didn't help, Whit. Ah, so you're going deaf, are you? Let me know when the process is complete. I have something I want to try, if I can just remember. Yes, yes, Kaladin said, sighing. You want to play the flute for one? No, that's not it. Ah, yes, I've always wanted to sneak up and poke a deaf man in the back of the head. I think it will be hilarious. Kaladin sighed. It would take an hour or so to reach Sabario's war camp. A very long hour. So you're just here, Kaladin said, to mock me? Well, it's kind of what I do. But I'll go easy on you. I wouldn't want you to go flying off on me. Kaladin jolted with a start. You know, Whit said nonchalant, flying off in an angry tirade. That kind of thing. Kaladin narrowed his eyes at the tall, light-eyed man. What do you know? Almost everything. That almost part can be a real kick in the teeth sometimes. What do you want, then? What I can't have, Whit turned to him, eyes solemn. Same as everyone else, Kaladin storm-blessed. Kaladin fidgeted. Whit knew about him in Surgebinding. Kaladin was sure of it. Which makes sense, as we know that Whit was also able to see Shallan Surgebinding way back when she was just a kid.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want, Kaladin said, from me? Ah, so you're thinking. Good. From you, my friend, I want one thing. A story. What kind of story? That is for you to decide. Whit smiled at him. I hope it will be dynamic. If there is one thing I cannot stomach, it is boredom. Kindly avoid being dull, otherwise I might have to sneak up and poke you in the back of the head. I'm not going deaf. It's also hilarious on people who aren't deaf, obviously. What, you think I'd torment someone just because they were deaf? That would be immoral. No, I torment all people equally, thank you very much. Great. Eventually, the carriage reached Sabariel's war camp. Farmers? Kaladin asked. Sabariel has them setting up lavis fields on the southwestern hills, Whit explained. The high storms out here are too powerful for farming. Tell that to the Naten people. They used to farm this entire area. Requires a strain of plant that doesn't grow as large as you're accustomed to. But why? Kaladin asked. Why wouldn't farmers go someplace where it's easier, like Alethkar proper? You don't know a lot about human nature, do you, Stormblessed? No, I don't. Whit shook his head. So frank, so blunt. You and Dalinar are alike, certainly. Someone needs to teach the pair of you how to have a good time now and then. I know full well how to have a good time. Is that so?
Do you?
Yes.
Do you, Kaladin?
It involves being anywhere you aren't. Whit stared at him, then chuckled. So you do have some spark of wit in you. Being around Whit must be corrupting me. Eventually, Whit pulled the carriage up to a nice manor home. Adolin climbed out to await Shallan. He glanced up toward the driver's seat, then started. You! Adolin exclaimed. Me! Whit replied. He swung down from the top of the carriage and performed a flowery bow. Ever at your service, Bright Lord Colin. What did you do with my usual carriage driver? Nothing. Whit? What, you're implying that I hurt the poor fellow? Does that sound like me, Adolin? Well, no. Exactly. Besides, I'm certain he's gotten the ropes undone by now. Ah, and here's your lovely almost-but-not-quite bride. Shallan Devar had emerged from the house. She suddenly started, eyes widening. She pointed at Wit with her free hand. "You!" Shallan exclaimed. "Yes, yes, people certainly are good at identifying me today. Perhaps I need to wear..." Wit cut off as Shallan lunged at him. Kaladin dropped to the ground, reaching for his side knife, then hesitated as Shallan grabbed Wit in an embrace, her head against his chest, her eyes squeezed shut. Kaladin took his hand off his knife, raising an eyebrow at Wit, who looked completely flabbergasted. He stood with his arms at his sides, as if he didn't know what to do with them. "I always wanted to say thank you," Shallan whispered. "I never had a chance." Adolin cleared his throat. Finally, Shallan released Wit and looked at the prince. "You hugged Wit," Adolin said. "Is that his name?" Shallan asked. "One of them," Wit said, apparently still unsettled. "There are too many to count, really. Granted, most of them are related to one form of curse or another." "You hugged Wit," Adolin said. Shallan blushed. "Was that improper?" "It's not about propriety," Adolin said. "It's about common sense. Hugging him is like hugging a white spine or a pile of nails or something. I mean, it's Wit. You're not supposed to like him." "We need to talk," Shallan said, looking up at Wit. "I don't remember everything we talked about, but some of it..." "I'll try to squeeze it into my schedule," Wit said. "I'm fairly busy, though. I mean, insulting Adolin alone is going to take until sometime next week." Adolin shook his head. He leaned in to Wit. "Hands off. She's far too young for me, child," Wit said. "That's right," Adolin said with a nod. "Stick to women your own age." Wit grinned. "Well, that might be a little harder. I think there's only one of those around these parts, and she and I never did get along."
Is he talking about a herald?
Older.
Night Watcher?
He's talking about cultivation.
Oh. He's as old as cultivation?
He's as old as cultivation.
Why is he as old as the gods?
"You are so bizarre," Adolin said, climbing into the carriage. Kaladin sighed, then moved to follow them in. "You intend to ride in there?" Wit asked, grin widening. "Yeah," Kaladin said. "Try not to flirt with the girl," Wit whispered. "Young Adolin seems to be growing possessive. Or, what am I saying? Flirt with the girl, Kaladin. It might make the prince's eyes bulge." Kaladin snorted. "She's light-eyed." "So?" Wit asked. "You people are too fixated on that." "No offense," Kaladin whispered, "but I'd sooner flirt with a chasm fiend." He left Wit to drive the carriage, hauling himself into it. Inside, Adolin looked toward the heavens. "You're kidding." "It's my job," Kaladin said, seating himself next to Adolin. "Surely I'm safe in here," Adolin said, "with my betrothed." "Well, maybe I just want a comfortable seat then," Kaladin said, nodding to Shallan. She ignored him, smiling at Adolin as the carriages started rolling. They decide to go see a menagerie, and Kaladin suffers through their flirting. Shallan reads an account of a high prince named Yeniv who was killed in a duel by Sadeus by the right of challenge and King's Boon because Yeniv opposed Galavar's unification campaign. Shallan says that Kaladin can try to invoke this boon to challenge Sadeus if he wins his upcoming duel spectacularly. Adolin accepted an envelope with the plan outlined inside for Navani and took Shallan's hand in his as he did so. The two shared a moment, melting over one another. Yes, Kaladin was increasingly convinced that the woman wasn't going to be of immediate danger to Adolin. If she was some kind of con woman, she wasn't after Adolin's life, just his dignity. Too late, Kaladin thought, watching Adolin sit back with a stupid grin on his face. That's dead and burned already. The carriage came to a stop and Kaladin climbed out. Thanks for the ride, Wit, Kaladin said. I'm sorry again about that flute you... Wit was gone from the top of the carriage. Another man sat there instead, a younger fellow in brown trousers and a white shirt, a cap on his head. He pulled that off, looking embarrassed. "Oh, I'm sorry, sir," the man said. He had an accent Kaladin didn't recognize. "He paid me well, he did. Said exactly where I was to stand so we could swap the places." "What's this?" Adolin said, climbing from the carriage and looking up. "Oh, Wit does this, bridge boy." "This? Likes to vanish mysteriously," Adolin said. "It weren't so mysterious, sir," the lad said, turning and pointing. "It was just back there, short ways, where the carriage stopped for turning. Oi was to wait for him, then take over driving this here coach. Oi had to hop on without jostling things. He ran off giggling like a child, he did." "He just likes to surprise people," Adolin said. "Ignore him." Shallan and Adolin walked off toward the menagerie. Kaladin jogged to catch up, eventually falling in a few steps behind them. He listened to them, both laughing, and wanted to punch them in the face. "Wow," Syl's voice said. "You're supposed to harness the storms, Kaladin, not carry them about behind your eyes." "What's wrong?" "Nothing's wrong," Kaladin said softly. I'm just tired of listening to those two." Syl looked over her shoulder at the pair just ahead. "Shallan and Adolin seem happy. What's wrong with that?" "Nothing, so long as I don't have to listen to it." Syl wrinkled her nose. "It's not them, it's you. You're being sour. I can practically taste it." "Taste?" Kaladin asked. "You don't eat, Syl. I doubt you have a sense of taste." It's a metaphor, and I can't imagine it. And you taste sour. And stop arguing, because I'm right. She zipped off. Kaladin wasn't giving those two enough credit. They might ignore him, but they weren't actively mean to him. They were happy and pleasant. Why did that annoy him so? Poor thing, Syl said, landing on the floor of a cage, looking at its crab occupant. What kind of life is this? A safe one, Kaladin shrugged. At least it has no need to worry about predators. Always kept fed. I doubt a chul thing could ask for more than that. Oh? And you'd be all right if that were you? Of course not. I'm not a chul thing. I'm a soldier. Syl landed on Kaladin's shoulder. I'm a soldier, Kaladin repeated. That's what you were, Syl said. It's what I want to be again. Are you sure? Mostly. The thing is, it's crazy, Syl. Insane. My time as a bridgeman was the worst in my life. We suffered death, oppression, indignity, yet I don't think I've ever felt so alive as I did in those final weeks. Next to the work he'd done with Bridge 4, being a simple soldier, even a highly respected one like captain of a high prince's guard, just felt mundane, ordinary. But soaring on the winds, that had been anything but ordinary. You're almost ready, aren't you? Syl whispered. He nodded slowly. Yeah, I think I am. People were congregating at the other side of the menagerie. Kaladin jogged off to investigate. Unfortunately, he soon recognized a familiar face above the crowd. Amaram was a tall man. Dalinar stood at his side, guarded by several of Kaladin's men who were keeping the gawking crowd back a safe distance. Heard my son was here, Dalinar was saying. You needn't pay, High Prince, the menagerie owner was said. Your presence is a grand blessing from the heralds upon my humble collection, and your distinguished guest. Amaram, he wore a strange cloak, bright yellow gold with a black glyph on the back. Oath? Kaladin didn't recognize the shape. It looked familiar, though. The double eye, he realized. Symbol of... Is it true? The menagerie owner asked, inspecting Amaram. The rumors around camp are most intriguing. Dalinar sighed audibly. We were going to announce this at the feast tonight, but as Amaram insists on wearing the cloak, I suppose it needs to be stated. Under the king's direction, I have commanded the refounding of the Knights Radiant. Let it be spoken of in the camps. The ancient oaths are spoken again, and Bright Lord Amaram was, at my request, the first to speak them. The Knights Radiant have been reestablished, and he stands at their head. And that is where we will leave off for tonight.
Dalinar, I'm gonna fucking kill you.
Amaram is the leader of the Knights Radiant.
Yeah, I don't think Kaladin wants to be a Radiant anymore.
Because, as we all know, that's how it works, right? You just speak the words and all of a sudden you're a Knight Radiant. That's all there is to it.
Well, that's all Dalinar knows.
I hope you enjoyed Wit in this chapter. I absolutely love him in this. I love...
And then he's never going to appear in the book again.
No, we still got a couple more scenes of Wit in this book.
Oh, we do?
Yeah. Well, he hasn't told his story yet.
Kaladin hasn't?
No, Wit hasn't told his therapy story yet. The Hoid therapy scene is a integral part of each Stormlight book. He's really
on... Stormlight?
Yeah, no, he doesn't give therapy scenes in other books. He didn't give Ciri one. When he showed up in Warbreaker, he just gave her some history.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It seems that he's on Roshar because he realizes that all of these characters need therapy, and he is there to give it to them.
Yeah. Ciri didn't really need therapy, though. She just needed information.
Information and personal growth.
Vivenna, she needed therapy.
She needed serious therapy. Next week is the end of this part. It will be a longer episode. I have as many notes as we did last season, and I really can't get it much shorter. It's really big. Anyways, but I can kind of tease you. It is this big duel that Adolin just agreed to, where he said he would fight anybody that Relis brings.
Mm.
Is a great thing to say to somebody.
Uh-huh. Anybody. Anyone at all.
Anyone at all. Whoever you bring. And so we will cover that next time. It is one of my favorite scenes in all of the series, and I do think there's a line in this sequence that I have told you before when I was reading the books for the first time, before I ever had the idea for this podcast. I think there's a line in here that I read and went, that's so awesome, and then I sent it to you. I was like, that's so cool. But yeah, we've got that, and then we have an interlude episode, and then we're into part four.
Fun.
So we're making good progress. I'm very excited for the interludes.
Wait, are we done with this episode already?
Yeah, we're done. Yeah, I told you I didn't have as much.
Yeah, but a good 10 minutes of the stuff that we said isn't going to be in the podcast. So is this podcast going to be like 35 minutes long?
It's going to be a short episode. I literally cannot start the next chapter because it is them going to the duel and the duel beginning.
Okay. Well, like,
there's nothing more I can do without us getting into the end of this part.
Well, I guess this is it then.
Yeah, I tried really hard to even cut out this episode, but I just couldn't. Because I would have had to squeeze this 30 minutes in somewhere else, and there just wasn't time for that.
And you can't cut Wit short.
I couldn't. That was it. If I could have cut, like, half of what we did, because half of what we did this episode was Wit. If I could have cut that, I could have stuck it onto the last episode, or moved some stuff around, and we could have made it. But that would have required me getting rid of pretty much all of Wit's lines, and I can't do that.
That's not allowed.
No, it's illegal. I hope you are excited for next week, which the chapter next week is chapter 56, White Spine Uncaged. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. You guys can... Oh God, where's my episode description? There it is. You guys can follow this show on Twitter at SpeakStormlet. We have a Discord server. The link to join that is in the episode description and also on our Twitter. It's our pinned tweet. You guys can email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. Our cover art was made by our good friend Alex. That is at @ALX_BEEGBOI on Twitter. The link to go there is also in the episode description. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll catch you guys next time. Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.